Okay, so this is November 11th. Still in Santa Monica with Gene Shuttler. And I thought we could start off by talking a little bit about some of the work that you do now for the LA Chamber Orchestra.
Sure.
And the other sort of charitable work that you do now. I know that it's been a, you know, something you've been committed to always, but you have a lot even more time to devote to it, and I know that the arts are really important to you. So maybe you can tell me how you got involved in that and when you started to care about music.
A couple of ways of approaching that. The first is to tell you that it's a mystery to me that I wasn't raised in a family where there were where people were charitable. We didn't have anything to be charitable with. So my interest in paying back to the community is really self-generated, but I've had it for a long time. I mean, in undergraduate school and in law school, I did charitable activities, but not to the degree that I do now. Currently, I'm the president of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, and I had been on the board of the Chamber Orchestra before I left to go to first Las Vegas, and then Bermuda, and then Dublin. And when I came back, my closest friend, who was on the board and who was the founder of the orchestra, a man named Joe Troy, wonderful man, went to Yale, by the way, undergrad. He went to that other place up north for law school.
Terrible.
But poor fellow. But he called me one day, and Joe was the kind of guy who would call you and say, "Let's have lunch." And you'd say, "Great, when?" And he'd say, April 19th, 11:30 at Pacific Dining Car. And that, you know, he was planned out that far.
He was Troy of Troy and Gold.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, "Sure, Joe, when?" He said, "How about today?" Okay, and we went to a restaurant that I haven't been able to go to since, and sat down and said, "I just learned yesterday that I have leukemia, and it's a bad kind, and I'm going to fight it, and I want you to come to dinner tonight to help me tell my family." So I did. Joe, I visited Joe almost every day in the hospital. And went through the radiation or through the chemotherapy with him and all of that. He asked me, but in a way that I couldn't refuse, to go back on the chamber board. And so I did. Mm-hmm. And
had you considered going back on the board before?
I like chamber music. One of the ways that I, not really a digression, but one of the ways that I started the year as president of the orchestra was to ask the board, "How did you get interested in classical music?" I got interested in classical music because of the Lone Ranger. That's the truth. But I love classical music. I particularly like chamber music. The orchestra plays all kinds, including, I believe that music began to go to hell with the Rite of Spring, and atonal, arrhythmic music is hard for me to understand. I think music should have melody and rhythm and theme.
Did you ever study music yourself?
No. I'm not a musician. People ask me sometimes, "What instrument do I play?" And I tell them honestly, I play the wallet. I play it very well. But so that's how I got interested in the board. Then I had a series of events. The first was the death of my daughter, the second was the death of my wife, and the third was cancer surgery. And in the middle of that, somebody decided that I should be president of the board. And it was a wonderful thing for me because it gave me something to think about besides those things. And I'm healthy now, by the way. So that's how I got to the chamber music. I am also on the board and have been for a very long time, again with a gap when I wasn't here, of the Constitutional Rights Foundation. Mm-hmm. That organization is designed to teach what used to be called civics.
In high school?
Junior high school.
Okay.
Junior high school is actually more important.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, the idea is to teach about the Constitution and about our basic rights without a slant to the left or a slant to the right.
Mm-hmm.
As you might imagine, there's more of a tendency to slant to the left than there is to slant to the right.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about rights.
Yeah. And I consider myself a liberal in the
lowercase.
Please, lowercase. especially in matters of civil rights and a fiscal conservative.
Uh-huh.
So I got involved in that. I now run the publications committee, which is sort of the key of the organization. We have publications last year in more than 5,000 schools.
Wow.
Big deal.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
How did you get involved with the Constitution?
I got involved with it because a woman named Vivian Monroe, boy is she wonderful, called me up one day and said, we need support from your corporation for this thing called CRF, Constitutional Rights Foundation.
And had you met Vivian before?
No.
Oh, okay. She called you.
Blind call. She knew I was general counsel and she figured she'd...
Okay.
I said, well, we're losing money hand over fist and we're not going to give you any money, but I'd like to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And I got interested in it and been doing it ever since. We have a moot court competition this year we'll have 3,000 students.
Wow.
Involved.
Junior high students?
No, those are all high school students.
High school moot court?
Yeah.
So do you interact with high school and junior high school kids?
Sure.
Through that? That must be fun.
Yeah, it's wonderful fun. You learn so much from kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can always teach you something because the questions are, you know, good questions. We developed a series of games that we use as teaching tools. One is called Stop and Frisk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of what are your rights when a policeman stops you and says, put your hands against the wall and starts to pat you down. You know, those are questions that have some immediacy for the kids that we teach.
Yeah.
Because it happens to them. And it's fascinating and great fun to do that.
So do most of those activities, are they mostly sort of targeted towards more inner city schools, or is it sort of a
cost? Oh, no, we're as interested as we are in the children of the upper middle class, they're not our target audience.
Okay, got it.
We're trying to teach people who don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who have giant color television sets can watch all the CSI they want to. I'm talking about kids who don't have that kind of thing. And who don't have that kind of teaching in schools.
Right.
They're really, the civics curriculum, the idea of teaching fundamental things like how many branches of government are there? How does the Senate work?
Mm-hmm.
What on earth is the Electoral College? Now that's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. I think we need another constitutional convention, frankly. I think there are things that don't work in the Constitution. But I think trying to, for instance, limit the length and amount of money that one can spend on a campaign, well, that takes on the First Amendment. That's not easy to do. And who would be against that? I mean, we all know it. I'll tell you who would be against it. Every network in the world which sells advertising, they would be against it. Guess what? Their voice speaks louder than mine.
Yeah.
So that is, those are the two principal charities I'm involved in. I'm also a member of the Southern California Regional Board for Penn. And I was just asked on Friday if I would lead the major gifts campaign for our 50th reunion at Yale Law. And of course I'll do that.
Yeah. So big
moment. That's an expensive proposition. But I believe very strongly that to whom much is given, much should be expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been given handed to me literally a wonderful life. Penn and Yale Law, full scholarship, both places. I think you have to pay that back. And I have, I'm proud to say, given at least the amount of my annual tuition every year since the day I graduated from Yale Law.
Wow.
And I was a second lieutenant making $226.40 a month,
mm-hmm.
then, plus jump pay, plus combat pay. So I was rich. I was getting $350 a month. So I have that spirit. I believe in it. I think that the sense of community is really the fabric that keeps this country together. I think the Republic will last out my children's time, my child's time, but I am not certain that it will last out my grandchildren's time. I think we are seeing terrible tensions in this country, from economic to really a horrible polarization between the very rich and the very poor, and no middle class.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful. And I don't know what to do about it, but I want a nation of people who have invested in their country and in their community.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a small house, but by God, they've got a house. You know,
yeah.
Something to fight for, something to work for. It makes them worry about taxes. I think we should worry about taxes.
Yeah.
So I'm committed to being a hopeless do-gooder.
Yeah.
I can't give blood because I have malaria, but I can do everything else. I'm mm-hmm. trying to.
Do you consider yourself political or more concerned?
I'm not political. Yeah, I did. I worked on Nelson Rockefeller's campaign in Pennsylvania when I was a young member of the bar there, and I vote, mm-hmm. of course. But I don't, I've not been active in politics here. People have approached me from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather work on the other side. I'd rather get the sense again of community.
Mm-hmm.
People helping each other, not the government helping them, because every dime you send to the government comes back as 6 cents. I want people to help each other directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way I do it. That's what I try and do.
It's not easy, but
it's not easy.
Important.
Yeah. And it's harder and harder. but if we don't do that. I want to tell you a story I was thinking about this morning. I used to play tennis with Kirk Kerkorian every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
He had all kinds of people come up there, Barbara Sinatra and Dean Martin and all kinds of people, Catholic in his taste. And one day both of us were sitting out while others were playing, and one of the guys who worked for him came up and said, Mr. K, I have a call I think you have to take. He said, okay, to call. Hi, Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Johnny, how are you? Yeah, good to hear you. Sorry you're not over here playing tennis. Yeah? Okay, when? Uh-huh. Okay. I'll take care of it for you. Somebody will be in touch with you. And he made a note, handed it to the guy. I said, what the hell was that? He said, somebody, Johnny Carson, wants to stay at the hotel. So who's he called? He calls me. He looked at me and he shook his head and he said, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just room clerks. And we really are all just room clerks, you know. Mustn't lose track of that.
Yeah. So you know, you reflect a lot on where you're from and sort of how your life has, you know, changed over time.
Because of you. I've never been reflective.
Really?
Not really. I mean, I when you reach a certain age, you begin to think about that because you want to. You think about what you need to pass on to your children and grandchildren, what they need to know about you to help them know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah. You do have a really good memory. You remember, I mean, it's...
I can't find my car keys.
Photographic memory. You remember every conversation and
details. I have a very good memory. It's my short-term memory is, like most people my age, an awful experience. But my long-term memory is pretty good.
Yeah. Well, so it seems that, you know, you obviously have... Just your life has just changed dramatically over time. You're in a very different place now than you were when you were born, in almost every way that I can imagine.
It's true.
Do you, I mean, when you do think about it, what do you think? I mean, is it just, it must in some ways be very, it's just your life, it's normal to you, but in other ways it's pretty astonishing.
I've had an extraordinary life, and I recognize that. I wish I could tell you that I planned it that way, but it didn't.
Yeah.
It happened to me. Mm-hmm. I was lucky, mainly lucky, sometimes I'm lucky. But, you know, I had the wit to take advantage of the main chance when it showed up. But gee, if you had asked me when I was 17, what would you think about living in Santa Monica, California, and Mayberry Road, and being president of the Chamber Orchestra? I have said, where's Santa Monica, and what's a Chamber Orchestra?
Yeah.
So I really think that I haven't. If I were to write what you're writing, I think I would call it a lucky life.
I mean, that's a really, it's a very humble way to put it, because in a lot of ways you've been such a go-getter and so hard, incredibly hard-working.
Helen, I think you may not make your own opportunities. You may just be lucky, as I have been, but to take advantage of them, mm-hmm. that requires some mettle, M-E-T-T-L-E. So I think I have that.
Yeah, absolutely. Were there ever any moments in your career or in college or law school where you felt sort of a tension between your background and what you were doing or what you were faced with?
Sure. I'm very much aware of the fact that I'm a country boy. I'm very glad that I don't live in Oklahoma, but I'm proud to be from Oklahoma, and I learned a lot of things by being raised in a small town, by being raised in a town so small that everybody knew whatever I did wrong. Very, and the lack of anonymity is a very useful factor in a small town. I count that as a blessing. I find myself in gatherings here where, as you do at the Yale Law School, where you look around you and everybody there is as smart as hell, beautifully educated, right down to St. Grotto sex when they were nine. And I look at that and people say, well, where are you from? And I said, well, my father was a truck driver. My mother was a nurse. My father never graduated from high school. I made my own way. And I'm not unproud of that.
Are you proud of it?
Well, I'm not vain about it.
Okay, pride is...
Because I know how much has happened since.
Mm-hmm.
But ashamed of it, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really remarkable. Are there times when you say you're glad that you don't live in Oklahoma now, and, mm-hmm. you know, is it something about Oklahoma specifically, or do you just mean you're glad that you are who you
no,
are?
I haven't been back. My plan was for my daughters that when they turned 16, I would take them to Europe. And I did that with Samantha. And it changed our lives. I mean, it made us both closer to one another.
Yeah. You just took her, the two of you.
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who the hell else? And when Whitney's turn came, I had just taken the job at MGM Grand, and I called her and said, honey, I can't get away long enough to take you to Europe, and you just have to give me a rain check. We'll just have to make it next year. And she said, I don't care about going to Europe, but what I really want to do is I want to go see where you were raised. I want to see where you went to high school. Wow. I want to go to Blackwell, Oklahoma. I want to see the house where you live. Where she got that idea, why she got that idea, I don't know, but it was impossible not to do that once she had asked. So she flew down from Chicago, and I met her in Wichita, and we drove around Wichita and then drove down to Blackwell and went out to the Oddfellows Cemetery and saw where my mother was buried and my father was buried and all of that. And
when was the last time you've been back?
That was the last time I was back. She was 16.
But before that?
Oh, before that, I've been back to bury my father. But that was for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I just I'm not ashamed of it. I'm a different person. There's a term in biology called a sport, which is some kind of outcropping of the norm, and it's pretty clear to me that I am that I am a sport. My mother was smart, my father was smart, I think, but I'm just different from anybody in my family.
Mm-hmm.
I respect them, but except for my cousins whom I cordially hate.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Are you in touch with them?
Oh no!
Okay.
Yeah, no. It's just. I'm really. It's really an apocryphal statement. I really don't have anything to do with any of my family anymore.
Yeah.
Except my daughter.
Yeah. So. Tell me about your. This is just my own curiosity in part, but we were talking about, you know, music and these sort of like high tastes that you have developed over the years. Tell me about your art collection. When did you become an art lover? And
well,
how did your tastes develop?
Yeah, I guess you know how to get the stories out. I've always been interested in art.
Always?
Well, from the time I was a little kid, yeah, there was I've always been interested in pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a musician. I am certainly not an artist. Anybody who sees my handwriting can tell you that. But I really became, I hate to use the term, a collector, though if you look around.
You have a lot of beautiful things.
You can see there's a collection here. There are people who are acquirers. Mm-hmm. William Randolph Hearst was an acquirer. But I'm not. I pick things that I can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
And the first of those was a painting that I saw, a print that I saw in Philadelphia. And I wanted it. It was a lot of money. I was making, I was a first year. And I think my salary was $6,200 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I fought for and got $1,000 bonus, biggest bonus they've given out.
Yeah.
I earned it. But I really wanted this piece. And my father died. And I went back and made sure that he was buried with Swearingen's and settled up his estate. There really wasn't anything to settle. I mean, he had a house. He had a, after my mother died, he took up with a woman that I didn't much care for, but that, there's nothing, I mean, that's why there's a wicked stepmother in every fairy story. And I got it all done, and it came to about $350. $328 to take true. And this print was $350. And I went into the gallery in Philadelphia on Chestnut Street and said, would you take $328 for that print? There's a reason for it. And this nice lady's, not if you don't tell me why. And I said, well, that's how much I got from my father. I thought I'd invested in something I really want. So that's the first piece I ever bought.
Wow.
And I'll show it to you at the end of the interview. It's upstairs. I still love it, by the way. I still think it's a wonderful piece. But
how did you come across it?
I just...
walking around?
Yeah. I saw it in the window. Mm-hmm. Liked it. This piece...
is that by Richet?
Is an Argentinian artist that I bought in Buenos Aires, and I saw it in a furniture store. But he's an up and coming artist, or was.
I love that.
I love it too, and so yeah. I got it, and ended up buying it from the former Minister of Culture for Argentina, who was also his agent or his representative, I would say agent. And I said, how are we going to get this up? She said, I'll bring it up. What do you mean? She said, well, I'll roll it up. It's canvas. I'll roll it up. I'll put it in my luggage. We won't declare anything. We don't have any taxes to pay on it. Well, you don't have to pay on imported art in this country, but there's an export tax in Buenos Aires. And a sales tax, of course, VAT. And brought it up, we met her at Shutter's Hotel, bought her a drink, she gave us the piece, and I had it put up.
When was that?
Oh, guys, that was, we were in Argentina. Trying to fit it in, the trips that we did. About 8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were with your wife?
Yeah.
I love that piece. It's great.
But I'll show you a couple others that you really like, if you like that one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that.
Anyway, the interest in art is what's the term you learned in law school? Sua sante?
Uh-huh.
On my own?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's real. I haven't studied art. I've taken courses in modern art and indeed in music, but I haven't really dug into any genre or really tried to be a knowledgeable about any art except the art of making wine.
Oh, and that's also
wine.
Really fun to
look at. I love wine. I spend a fair amount of time and money on it, and it's great fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's great fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You said, switching gears a little bit, you said that one of the reasons that you were excited and interested to be part of this project was that it would be a chance to sort of show your family, your daughter and your grandkids, tell them about yourself in a way that you don't on your own. Or, talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think I've had this life of, I think we can both agree, has been extraordinary. And I can share pieces of it, and I have, and will continue to. But But this just gave me an opportunity to do something that I don't do very much, which is to reflect and to think about what's been important to me and what has been a change for me, how I changed. And this is just a wonderful opportunity. I'm grateful to the law school for sending you all this way.
Yeah.
At least they didn't have to pay for a hotel for you.
No, it's true. That's true. It was nice for me too. Well, you know, you talk a lot about you talk about how you feel like you're very lucky and you've, you know, had a lot of opportunities because of luck and because of other things, hard work and you know, and you've had a lot of success in your life. And you also have not had an easy life by any means. You've had, you know, a lot of challenges come your way.
Oh, yeah.
And it can't have been easy, you know. In terms of your, you know, professionally easy, but also, you know, emotionally easy.
There's no question about it, and I've paid a price for that. Still in all, I mean, at the end of the day, for all the pain of loss, which is the hardest one to deal with, I count myself a lucky man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
And not always easy to say that, but it's true.
Yeah. Are there, have we talked about things over the past few days that you feel like you haven't really talked to your daughter about, or that she would be surprised?
Absolutely. And I'm going to give her a bound copy of the transcript. At this point, it's going to be a pretty good-sized transcript.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, you might feel free to edit that. Yeah, I won't be offended.
Yeah. What do you think would surprise her the most about it?
Yeah, I think she would be, I think she will be surprised by my overall view of what's happened to me. I think Samantha regards me as a driven person, and as a person who knows what he wants and goes out and gets it. And I think she'll be surprised to find out how much I didn't know what I wanted and went out and got it. I didn't know what I wanted and didn't know how to get it and found out as I went along. My grandfather used to talk about this fellow who had a huge field in northwestern Oklahoma. And he said, you know, he said, that fellow's like a guy put on his Stetson upside down and it rained nickels. I love that. You know, I put on my hat upside down and it rained nickels.
Do you think that sounds like you?
No, to some degree. I also looked for where the rain was coming from.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tried to anticipate the world a little bit.
Is there anything that you wish I had asked about, period, or more, or is there anything that you would like to talk about that we haven't talked about?
I think that if I were teaching the course that you're in,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to get a message across to my students, of course I would do it in the Yale way, which is I would never tell you what the message was, so you just have to figure it out. But if I were to do it directly, it would be that that no matter how much we think that today is going to be much like yesterday. In fact, change is constant and endemic to us. to human beings. Mm-hmm. And if you fall into the trap of thinking that tomorrow is going to be like yesterday, you will not be prepared for what tomorrow is really like. So you got to look, you have to have some foresight, and you have to be aware of changes within yourself and within the environment in which you live. The classic example of that is warfare. Mm-hmm. Generals always prepare for the last war, and there's never a last war. It's always the one that's different. Mm-hmm. Look at Teddy Roosevelt, one of my great heroes. I think he's one of the most interesting and vital and important men in our history. Mm-hmm. But after he'd lost two sons, imagine that, he wrote to President Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, and offered to raise a brigade of cavalry. He wanted to charge up San Juan Hill. Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing wrong with that was there was something called a machine gun. And that machine gun would have killed them all. There's also things called trenches and gats and other things. Too horrible to think about. But Teddy still saw the war as, I know what to do. Unleash my saber and go charge. Well, you need to be aware of change. You need to be to perceive it, think about it, anticipate it, act on it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, in the long run, you'll find yourself disadvantaged.
Is that a lesson that you learned gradually, or is
yes.
that something?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I must have been 30 before that lesson really came home to me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't any particular event, it just was.
Right, because before you were 30, you obviously had experienced this
sure.
kind of...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But it didn't come home to me. It didn't click in. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I picked 30. I'm just...
Sometime in your
sometime out there, yeah.
Yeah.
Notwithstanding your comment on my memory, in fact, all that stuff kind of blurs together after a while. I actually had to go do some digging to make sure that I had my dates right for you.
Thank you for doing that. Is that philosophy sort of something that, or lesson, something that you feel that you have to remind yourself more? I mean, as you get older, you have a more stable life in some ways, and well, in some ways maybe not, but.
Yeah, I represented one time a fellow named T. Boone Pickens.
Ah, I've heard of him.
T. Boone, wonderful guy. Still is a wonderful guy. I haven't seen or talked to him, but he wanted to take over Union Oil out here. Mm-hmm. And the guy who ran Union Oil, last name I have now forgotten. And whose name I need to remember. Let's just call him Fred Smith. Mm-hmm. Was 72 years old. And Union Oil had a huge pile of cash. And that's what Pickens wanted. He wanted to take that money and put it to work instead of just having it pile up. Mm-hmm. And suddenly old Fred Hartley, had this plan and came up with this long-term plan that would use all of that money. And Pickens was skeptical of that. And he said, hell, he said, Fred Hartley is 72 years old. If I was 72 years old, I wouldn't even be buying green bananas. When you get to be a certain age, you don't buy green bananas. You think about your mortality, which is evident all around. And you feel the changes in your body, and you're constantly aware of that. I played squash with more determination than skill for a long time, and I know I'm a step shorter. Mm-hmm. And I know that I don't hit the ball as hard as I used to. But
so you think in a way you're more aware day to day of sort of how change can creep up on you?
I think you are. And every person that you talk to in this series of interviews, I'm sure, will tell you that they see the changes that are about us, all about us, I think more keenly than the young people who, like yourself, were raised with a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I had a cathode ray tube sat on my desk. I didn't want it there.
Yeah.
Thank God I learned to type. But I think our generation, every generation of our age, before and after, is much aware of change.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes lamentably so. Sometimes all we do is be curmudgeonly about it and say, well, I remember when you could see decent television, like I Love Lucy and things like that. But I think change is, first of all, endemic. You can't do anything about it. And second, something you should anticipate and live with. I'm looking now. I've lived in this house 10 years today, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
And I'm beginning to think about how long I'll be able to navigate the stairs here.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty clear to me that I won't be living here 10 years from now. You know? So you have to begin to think about, well, where am I?
Mm-hmm.
And what should I do to plan for that? What art will I sell?
You could go for a more Victorian hang,
yeah.
Cover the walls.
Something better. Like,
yeah. Who are you closest to now? Who do you talk to all the time besides
sure.
your daughter? Who do you see all the time?
I am blessed with longtime friends. My closest friend lives in Philadelphia, and I talk 5 days a week, every morning, on my way to play squash, go to work, I call David, and we talk, about
it. College friend?
Yeah, I knew him in college. We didn't become really friendly until our senior year, but we've been friends for 50 years.
Have you always talked that frequently?
No. When I was in the service, mm-hmm. I didn't talk to anybody much, but when I came back to Philadelphia, he was living in Philadelphia, and we rekindled our friendship, and we've maintained it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of friends that I've known for 30 years. Marguerite Owen, and I just got an email from her this morning. We keep up with one another, and I think always will.
Mm-hmm.
Always until one of us dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing a woman now that I think is quite wonderful. I spent a lot of time with her.
You didn't have to go to the plays?
You know, I have to go to see her son's play, which has taught me more about the Brontes than I wanted to know. But I would say, a friend here, Nick Chiariello, who also went to Yale, and then went to that other school up north for law school.
Oh, he's a lawyer.
And Nick and I have been friends since before he was married, and his eldest son is now 42,
mm-hmm.
so we've been friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I treasure that. I think continuity of friendship, it's like, there's a word for it, patina.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the change that occurs over time in leather, mm-hmm. or in bronze. And it gives a different dimension to it. So.
Do you feel a personal bond with other lawyers to any extent, or do you just think you're friends with them?
No, I think there's a certain comfort. Constitutional Rights Foundation board is three quarters at least lawyers. Mm-hmm. There's a certain comfort in being members of what used to be a profession is now a business. The real connection I feel, the real bond I feel, is with Yale Law School. And it's changed in ways that I could ever have imagined. There's actually some law being taught there, I'm told.
It's true.
It's true, quite. Is that true or is it not true?
Probably more, well.
I mean, there's a course of practice, isn't there?
Yeah, there's plenty of practical law. It's not, there still is a lot of like lofty discussion of what
sure.
we think is best for society.
Sure.
But I think you end up learning some practical things. And if you want to, you can learn a lot of practical things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I learned some. And it didn't bother me that I wasn't learning any. I figured I'd learn all I needed to learn in the bar review course, and I
yeah,
did.
Yeah, I think that was
enough to get to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I worked with Grant Gilmore, and he went off to Harvard, and when he came back, I was really interested in what the differences were between the two schools. And he said, first difference is size. You really have to defend yourself against students because there are so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I think the kids up there work about as hard as kids here. In fact, I think at Yale, you have sort of an attitude that you shouldn't let people know how hard you're working.
Mm-hmm.
And at Harvard, it's sort of a badge of pride to let people know how hard you're working. Which I thought was an interesting comment. But I love it. Yale Law has been very good to me, and I'm honored to have been admitted to its ranks.
And you'll be back for the 50th reunion.
Oh yeah, October the 3rd.
Have you visited a lot in recent years?
A fair amount, yeah. I was there for the tercentennial right after 9/11, and was there for my 20th and 25th. And my 15th, I played in the Yale Open squash tournament.
Oh.
And went to my reunion at the same time.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was great, serving God and mammon.
That's fun.
But I haven't been back as much as I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because it's not easy to get to New Haven, you know.
Right.
I mean, it really isn't.
It's the opposite of Dublin with the...
Exactly, the hub. You can get in and out easily.
Mm-hmm.
You can't easily get in and out of New Haven.
Do you travel a lot these days?
I travel
days?
A lot,
yeah. You visit your family.
Yeah, well, going back and forth, Chicago is a given.
Yeah.
But when Lois and I were married, we rented a villa in Tuscany. We took a trip down the Rhine.
Mm.
We went to Argentina. We went to China. We went to Berlin twice. Paris, of course. Vancouver.
What about the Netherlands?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. In fact, we took a barge trip through the canals of Netherlands and Belgium. And it was really quite wonderful. I hadn't spent any real time there. I'd done transactions that required me to be in the Netherlands, but I hadn't really stayed there. I didn't try and look up my family or anything like that. I was afraid they would be scurrilous in some way.
Really?
No.
That would make me want to look it up.
Yeah, it would make me too. But it was fun to see it, especially from a barge, because you can see so much. Mm-hmm. It goes so slowly.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I'm great friends with the former Consul General to the United, to Southern California from the Netherlands. Wonderful, wonderful soul named Madeleine de Plonk. And her her husband, who's a former ambassador from Australia to the United Nations and to France, two really accomplished and interesting people. But they travel all the time to different places. Jim has to be in Australia 6 months of the year to maintain his status and the health program and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And Madeleine has to be in the Netherlands about 6 months a year. So they go back and forth with occasional pit stops here. We get together and have dinner and talk.
That's nice.
Always talk.
Are there any places you've never been to that you would like to go? You've pretty well traveled.
Yeah, I yes, there is one place. I have only been in Turkey once, and then only in Istanbul, in airport, and to a meeting, and I spent some time in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not much for archaeology, but I really like to do that, get into the archaeological aspects. And another trip I would very much like to make and haven't been able to make, Lois and I had planned to go before she died, is to Israel and the Middle East. Massive ignorance about it. I've been in Tehran on business, but I don't know the Middle East at all, and I'd like to. The other hand, I think I would be very wary if I were walking around.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
have you ever traveled to Indonesia?
Yes, I've been in Jakarta and Indonesia, and like that. And I would like to go back to Thailand. I don't want to go back to Cambodia and Laos, Vietnam, the Golden Triangle. Just don't want to go back. Yeah. I don't know anybody who's been to Vietnam in the last 5 years who hasn't come away saying, one, they love Americans. Two, it's a fascinating country and they're doing all kinds of interesting stuff there. And three, it's cheap.
Mm-hmm. Well,
those are all good reasons to go, but I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I think I've seen the world pretty much. I know.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I've not spent any great amount of time in India. And I'm not sure I want to.
Mm-hmm.
No, not that there aren't many interesting things about it, but I think the poverty there puts me off a little bit. It's awfully hard.
It would be hard to see.
I've been in what's now called Mumbai, Bombay, and the people in the streets are starving. It's hard to take for me.
Have you traveled much with Samantha or kids?
With Samantha?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Since the Europe trip.
Samantha has twice now given me the gift of the most precious thing she has, which is time. Because she is a busy soul.
She and her husband both work full time.
Well, with four children and a boxer puppy, she's pretty busy, and she's billing about 600 hours a year with the firm, Foley and Lardner. And her husband works hard too. He's an entrepreneur. He's several pots boiling at the same time. Very, very good businessman, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But she's twice said, for your birthday or for Christmas, I'm giving you me. And once we went to New York, and had just a fabulous time. Just the two of us went to the theater. And she had never really contemporary art, MoCA. And I loved it, so we spent a day there. We didn't spend but 2 hours at the Met, at the Metropolitan, but MoCA we spent more time there. And then she gave me a trip with her to the wine country. We went up to Santa Barbara and stayed in Santa Barbara and went around to the Santa Ynez Valley for a couple of days. And those trips count for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm planning for a Christmas present to Jed and Samantha a trip to Washington. It's hard to believe that these 40-year-olds have never been in Washington.
They've never been there?
They've never been there. They're children of the Middle West. And I think you have to go to Washington. I mean, for me, I know exactly where I want to go. When I'm in Washington, I know exactly what I want to do. But I'm working on, and I think I can pull it off this spring, getting them both admitted to the bar of the Supreme Court, which is not that hard. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, all you have to do is be admitted to the circuit court bar and make a plot, and they both are. But getting them to the Supreme Court, getting them inside the chambers, and good old Yale Law School is really handy for getting that sort of thing done. And taking them around, showing them Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Not with their children, just with them.
They might want to take their kids at some point too.
Well, that's up to them.
Yeah.
I don't want to take I want to take their kids on raft trips and stuff like that. I don't want to march them around saying, we're now going to the Lincoln Memorial. Not for me.
That's a great idea. That's amazing that they haven't.
I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
I think they ought to know where all this money's going. Washington's a perfect example of what you can do for a city if you have an unlimited budget.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
It's a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm some of the more recent additions I'm not particularly happy with. I think the memorial to Martin Luther King is just ghastly.
It's not the best. It's just, my favorite.
But the Roosevelt, the memorial to Franklin Roosevelt, it's wonderful, and it's relatively new. And of course, I never go there, but when I go to the wall, that's a pilgrimage. That's something I have to do. Say hello to some old friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great place to be. All kinds of interesting things going on. I want these. It just frustrates me that they haven't been, so I'm trying to make them go with me.
Do you go to the museums also?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love the Smithsonian. All of it. But being able to go to Julia Child's kitchen is really just such a dream.
So fun. I love it. Well, I feel like we've covered an awful lot of territory, and it's been such a pleasure for me, and I just want to give you a chance to, in case there's just anything else that you've thought about, but I don't know, I feel like I've made you talk about everything possible.
I think you've been an excellent, I'll use the term interrogator.
That's how I've been thinking about myself this whole time.
it shows. But I appreciate very much the opportunity and like working with you.
Well, I really enjoyed it too, and thank you very much for being a part of this. I'm excited to share the results.
Let me know how it comes out.
I will, absolutely.